Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League is back this weekend and we cannot wait for kickoff. We've got a massive episode of the Gaiken Pod to preview it all for you with Michael Bridges, Mark Schwarzer and Thomas Sorensen. But we kick off with the news that Lionel Messi has confirmed his move to Paris Saint-Germain. So much to talk about. Let's get stuck into it. Yeah, here we go. Another season of the Gaiken Pod is ahead of us as we begin by previewing the 2021-2022 season of the Premier League. Roll around just like that. It feels like a few minutes ago we were ending the Euros, but thank goodness the football season has rolled around once again. David Wiener with you for the fourth season of the Gaiken Pod, if you can believe that. And before we jump in, just want to say hope all you listeners out there are well and safe and looking after yourselves during another lockdown here in Australia. And let's hope, like it did over the last 18 months, that football can provide us a little bit of solace and entertainment. And that's what we'll try to do for you over the next hour or so. Joining me today, well, we've got a great show ahead of us. Michael Bridges, welcome. Great to see you once again for another season.
Great to see you. Great to hear you, Dave. And great to be back talking about football after the Euros. It was good to have a little bit of downtime, but great that we know the Premier League is back.
Thomas Sorensen, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you for being back. You know, it's Olympics behind us. Now we can't wait for the Premier League, for football and all the great news coming through with Messi. You know, plenty to talk about.
We have a huge news day ahead of us and we have a great third guest too. We almost went ahead without you, Schwartzy, but welcome to the show today. Just in the nick of time. It's great to see you on the Gaiken Pod. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, guys. Thanks for waiting for me. Thanks for being patient. I'm jet lagged. That's all I can say.
Jet lag?
I don't know. I just made something up. There's really a neat reason for it, isn't it? I can't explain it.
What's the discipline policy, Bridgie? You're the running the ship in here in the dressing room.
Well, since Schwartzy's got his show and the two sharp reds, I would just think if we all send Schwartzy our home address in Australia, it'd be lovely to get a fine drop of red wine each delivered as the fine, because half an hour is bang out of order. And I'll tell you what, he knows from the fines and the clubs that he's played at in the past, it would be a lot more than three bottles of red wine for half an hour late.
Most buses would have gone by now.
Correct.
Well, we're just in the nick of time and we've got a lot to talk about. So let's get stuck into it, because my goodness, to start the season, we probably have the biggest transfer that I think we've been able to discuss in the three or four seasons of the Gaiken Pod. Lionel Messi, we're recording Wednesday morning, fresh off the news that he has inked that two-year deal with an option for a third with Paris Saint-Germain. He will wear the number 30, the jersey he wore in his early years at Barcelona, a 25 million euro salary for the season. Wow. Bridgie, I'm still in shock. So over to you. I just cannot believe what's happened over the last three or four days in the world of football.
Yes, absolutely incredible. And even seeing him in that PSG jersey standing in the middle of the stadium. I mean, the announcement on social media was incredible, where they've got the drone footage going through the shop at Paris Saint-Germain. It flies out. It goes around the stadium. You see Messi in the middle of the park. And I still can't get my head around seeing him in a PSG shirt and not a Barcelona shirt. But I'll tell you what, incredible business, an incredible contract. I think he said 25 million in wages there, Dave. I think his sign on fee is 25 million pound as well. So we're looking at £1 million a week, and absolutely incredible. I still can't get my head around how it's happened. And I think it's a really, really sad situation that Barcelona have found themselves in. The fans, I'm devastated for them, because I never thought we would see Messi move after Manchester City tried to make an approach for him. I think it was last season we were talking about this. And I thought they'd managed to pull it off and keep hold of him. Sadly, they haven't. And it was only going to be two powerhouses, I think, that could have battled out for his signature in City and PSG. and the strike force with Mbappe, Neymar, Di Maria. It's just absolutely frightening. Pochettino must just be thinking, my God, if we do not win the Champions League this year, there is something wrong. And he will be gone if they don't.
How do you feel about it, Thomas? Because there's a lot of people that are looking at going, wow, this is fantasy football. This is the best front three, not only in world football right now, that we've possibly ever seen. But it's also a bizarre situation. And there's just something that doesn't feel quite right about it either.
Yeah, for me, it's sad that he has to leave a club that he loves. You know, he's stated that several times, the loyalty he's shown, the history he has there. Bridget, you mentioned the fans. And just because of mismanagement financially from Barcelona, you know, this is not where we should be. It's great for us that we can sit here and talk about, you know, it's great news. You know, and again, you're talking about, you know, fantasy football is certainly going to be that at PSG. But, you know, well, he shouldn't have gone. And that's the sad truth about it. You know, we're talking about loyalty in the modern game. And you got a player there who's an icon and the greatest we probably ever had. And he's been forced out of a club that he wants to stay at. I think, you know, that's sadly the state of the affairs. I'm not happy about it. But, you know, I'm sure they're very joyous in Paris.
Speaking of loyalty, I asked my wife about his contract. And I said, if you were offered $1 million a week, would you stay with me? There was no loyalty whatsoever. She said, I'd be gone in a flash, especially to Paris. So there you go.
Well, see, how big a moment is this in the world of football? Him going to Paris is a game changer. It changes the whole scene of European football, but also the fact that when things broke down in Barcelona, and they broke down badly, there's only one really that could take him.
I think there's a number of things you can look at here. I mean, firstly, the demise of Barcelona, the sorry state that they find themselves in. I just find it really, really kind of, I think the decision, the announcement of it was really political in the timing of it, waiting for Messi to come back. Messi was in the understanding that he was going to sign a new 5-year contract. And then the club announcing the sort of almost like the hour that he returned back to Barcelona after the extended holiday after Copa America, that they were unable to give him a new contract, and that he had to leave, and basically it was out of their control, which is, you know, I think it's really sad to see, like Thomas was saying there, to see Messi anywhere else other than at Barcelona is a scary thought. And then you look at PSG and you look at what they've been able to accomplish in this transfer window. Firstly, how is it even possible? You know, financial fair play. I mean, I don't know how that's even possible. But then you look at what they've done, and all the talk over here is it the best transfer window any club's ever had over time? Donnarumma, Ramos, Wijnaldum, and Messi. Hakimi. Insane, isn't it? To think that PSG, together with, obviously, you know, when you look at Mbappe, I mean, the only thing I would say is there are rumours now that Mbappe, it kind of opens the door a little bit for Mbappe possibly to move to Real Madrid. Whether that happens or not, only time will tell. But if he does stay, geez, I mean, you look at the formidable side that PSG have got, and is there anyone out there with the ability to stop them?
Swartzy, you talk about how they have managed to pull this off in the financial fair play. That's why we have the luxury of having a Dave Wiener who investigates all of this stuff. And I'm sure he'll have something to say to explain it, because I am the same as you. I've got no idea how they've managed to do this.
Like every other fan, I was bewildered like you guys, looking at it going, it just doesn't make sense. And the only logical explanation for it is, whilst obviously they have coffers that go beyond anyone's mind could even comprehend with the sovereign ownership that they've got, during the pandemic, UEFA loosened the financial fair play rules, because what happens in financial fair play is you can only spend what you earn. And if you go beyond that, you get a cap for the subsequent seasons to make sure you don't spiral out of control. But naturally, during the pandemic, clubs were making losses that weren't forecast when they were spending and building up their squads. So there was a relaxing of the punishment if you were spending more than you earned, because clubs were not having tickets, they were getting less in merchandise, or they were losing money. So simple as that. So it was meant to protect most clubs of a normal level, not Paris Saint-Germain. But Paris Saint-Germain, if you applaud opportunism and
you've got the best lawyers in the world, Dave. Like they have done rules.
Yep, they have done that right there. So the rules that were there to protect the most clubs, Paris Saint-Germain have swept in. Reading everything, it seems that they were very, very switched on to the fact that their next transfer strategy was going to involve targeting your Ramoses, your Wijnaldums, those types of players who were coming off contract, who they could then entice with big salaries, agent bonuses, and that kind of thing. But to do that at a time where there were these rules as well, that's how they've kind of run the maths, which just to the layman like us make absolutely no sense. But I just want to ask you guys, I mean, with the talk of Kane going with Grealish to City and Messi going to Paris Saint-Germain, do any of you just does that rankle with any of you guys? Does it just feel a bit off to any of you guys?
Yeah.
Anybody?
A little bit. But, you know, I think you look at the likes of Chelsea, for example, and what they've been able to accomplish over the last 12 months as well, since their transfer ban was lifted, and the type of squad they've been able to accumulate. Manchester United haven't been quiet in this transfer window either. And, no, you know, there's a chance that the spending hasn't ended with them either. Liverpool, there's talk of Liverpool now also looking to spend and having to find money to spend because they're worried about being left behind, even though it's almost like they've had two or three new signings with players coming back from injury, Van Dijk, Gomez in particular, and they're huge for them. So I still think, you know, even though on paper PSG obviously looked miles ahead of everyone else, you know, when you talk about world football, you look at your run European football, Bayern Munich is still a very strong side. PSG, of course. I don't think you can write off Real Madrid. You can't write off Juventus, even though, you know, they didn't have a particularly great season last season, but Allegri's back there. Then you look at Chelsea, Man City, Man United. You know, I think there's still a decent spread, but we're getting close to a point where there's only a couple of clubs, literally there will be possibly only two or three clubs that look like they've monopolized everything.
I think what you're saying is that we had Man City last season, who was under the cosh with UEFA restrictions, and then, you know, why can they suddenly, with the wage bill they have, go out and spend 100 million on Grealish, potentially another 120 million on Kane?
He's not leaving.
We'll see. But, you know, so I get that. And then you hear other clubs, Arsenal, who've had to take out loans to pay off another loan. You know, where does that leave financial fair play that was instated to make it a fair playing field? And when you look at these big clubs spending and you look at, you know, other clubs struggling, you look at, yeah, Barcelona and the state they're in, and then, yeah, is it skewed? Is there something rotten in the state of football?
Do they all know that they can go and try and get in as much debt as they possibly can between now and that Super League talk that we tried to scrap a year and a bit ago? That's still lingering around, man. I'm telling you, there's a lot of money involved in that. And the more these clubs are going ahead and signing players than the way that they are doing and monopolizing the market at the top end, it's a worrying thought for me in going forward, I've got to say.
Let's also not forget PSG were the ones that weren't interested in being involved in the Super League. They stayed way away, you know, miles away from it. Barcelona and Real Madrid, what they do, that seriously needs to be looked at a bit more, because Barcelona to be 1.2 or 1.3 billion euros in debt.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that's not accumulated over a year or two, you know, and the financial fair play, the way it's worked out is over a 2-year period as well. Let's not forget. And then, you know, what Dave was saying there about UEFA relaxing also the parameters because of the pandemic gives them a little bit more leeway, of course. You look at Messi, for example, and how much money Barcelona are going to lose just by letting him go in terms of revenue. And then obviously the reverse effect, the opposite effect is how much revenue is going to be gained by PSG by the simple fact of having Messi on their books. It's astronomical. And it almost goes back to the days of, you know, when David Beckham was signed by Real Madrid, and I think within the first 3 months, the £25 million at the time, which was a lot of money, they regained just in shirt sales alone worldwide. with Messi, it won't be long before those shirt sales also bring in the cash.
It puts Paris Saint-Germain, who have been building towards this moment, this now takes them to the level they dream of. You can't ignore the fact that obviously their Qatari owners have this now a year before the World Cup that they have there. I know this isn't a financial thing, but in the weekend where there was the speculation, they added nearly a million followers to their Instagram account. And all the while, I mean, I looked to look at it again and again last night of the people outside the Camp Nou in Barcelona scraping off Messi's picture from the stadium walls. It just defied belief. So I think what you said earlier, Schwartzy, about Barcelona have a lot of questions. They do a lot of questions because their wage bill is still almost hemorrhaging now without him. So they've still got a lot of problems to deal with in the next season, beside the fact playing a campaign without the guy who was leading all the attacking metrics in La Liga last season. And then Paris Saint-Germain, as you touched on, guys, Mauricio Pochettino, you know, he's got one job and one job only, and that's to win the Champions League. And by the way, knock off Lille from the top of Ligue 1. So a fair bit to do there. Last question is, have you seen this front three? Now we've been very kind of circumspect about it and looking at all the negatives at Barcelona. But in terms of pure fantasy football, can you remember seeing a front three like this?
I don't think you can call it a front three, Dave, because Icardi's there, Di Maria is there. It's just Drexler still there. I just don't get it. I look at their squad and I just go, wow, this is absolutely incredible. But it is just fantasy football. Messi back with Neymar, and if we stay in, Mbappe is going to stay there. I'd like to think Mbappe would stay there because, you know, Messi, what, 34 years of age, few years, Mbappe going away. He hasn't been fantastic in the Euros, but I'm just going to froth at the mouth to watch these play football because it is absolutely dream. It's a dream.
Your man Poch better win a trophy, Bridgie, because if he doesn't...
well, what's interesting as well, you talk about Icardi being at PSG and he's heavily linked with Spurs. Is that Spurs finding a replacement for Harry Kane?
Well, there's Martinez as well at Inter Milan. I hope if they're going to get anybody, I'd like to say it was Martinez. I don't like thinking it's going to be Icardi because he comes with a hell of a lot of baggage with his partner, who is his agent. She can kick up a stink everywhere she goes. So Martinez would be the one for me, Swartzy. And you've got to have, I think Tottenham are definitely putting in some plan Bs and Cs as security nets in case this deal does go through. It's looking like he is going to be there, but I just can't wait till the deadline shuts.
Bridget, if you were Spurs, right, 130 million, they're talking about Manchester City being prepared to spend 130 million pounds on Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Surely you'd sell him for that.
Swartz, you know my love affair with Harry.
I know.
I absolutely adore him. I would take the money.
I
would take the money. Yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of money. What that could do, I mean, I've been impressed. We're going off track here, but I've been impressed with what Nuno Espirito Santo has done since he's come in there. I like the fact that he's got Mendes at his disposal where they can bring in players and the power that he has. So for me, that would be a good little way of obviously paying back some of the stadium and being able to have a bit of a rebuild in a clear out. And Harry, unfortunately, would be one of the ones that is a catalyst because he's earned his place as a Spurs legend because of the goals that he has scored.
We might as well keep talking about Kane before we just jump into the season preview. And Thomas, there's reports that he will report back to training later in this week. But what did you make of the tactic of not turning up, trying to enforce or make his point when Daniel Levy supposedly said that the gentleman's agreement that he could leave never actually happened? How did Spurs get to this moment? And what did you make of Harry Kane's tactics to try and force a move because of how desperate he was?
I think if there is an agreement between him and David Levy, you know, I can understand where he's coming from. And he also knows that he's at a stage of his career. He's at his peak. If he needs to win things, he has to leave Spurs because they're not going to win. Sorry, Bridget. They're not going to win anything, potentially maybe the League Cup, but they're not going to win anything else for the next couple of years at least. And his time is running out. You know, he needs to be at a Man City, at a top European club, Liverpool, Manchester United, potentially, who's on the up, not Spurs. And so I probably would have done the same to some extent if that agreement was in place, because, you know, he's done his bit for Spurs. You know, he's been there through bad times as well, and been a club person. a little bit like Messi. You know, he's shown loyalty, so you got to show him something back if that amount of money comes in, because they have to take it. I agree with Schwartzy. You know, that's too good an offer, and they can build on that as well. They need money as well from the stadium. So, yeah.
I know Harry Kane is a massive admirer of Alan Shearer, and I know Alan Shearer is a huge admirer of Harry Kane for what he's done. The goal scorer is a very, very, you know, similar all-rounders. And if there's any bit of advice that you could pass on and you look at Alan Shearer's trophy cabinet, like his goal scoring record's frightening, but that move when he could have gone to Manchester United and he went to Newcastle United to be a club legend, which he is, but, you know, that trophy cabinet wasn't what it wanted to be. And I think Harry Kane, they'll recognise that, and that's why he's trying to force a move, because you go to Manchester City, you're going to have a trophy cabinet, and it could put you on that stage where you're looking at Ballon d'Or awards.
Well, as we begin our season preview, we do it with Harry Kane as a Tottenham player, ironically with Manchester City playing Tottenham in the opening round of the season. Nuno says he is available. Whether he plays will be very, very interesting to see, given he's only just returning to training. Well, he hasn't yet by the time we record. So we're going to start this season preview looking at the pros and cons of the contenders for the Premier League this season. Look at Manchester City without Harry Kane. Possibly with Harry Kane, but Schwartzy, they've got an embarrassment of riches whether or not they get their star striker nevertheless.
They do. And listening, you know, to Pep Guardiola after the Community Shield, he was asked the question about whether or not he felt that, you know, he needed a number nine, an out-and-out number nine. And he said his response was the case that, you know, he's happy with what he's got. And they're moving forward, and he's just waiting for all his players to be back, fit, ready to go, which was the day after the Community Shield, where everyone was back after international breaks, the extended breaks that they received. And City will possibly be a little bit slow starting like they were last season. And this is a really good, interesting game for Spurs, because Spurs have done okay pre-season. They look all right. Other than the Harry Kane distraction, they've been okay. So it's going to be a really good indicator to see where Spurs actually are at this moment in time. And they could cause an upset. And I say upset, you know, against a Man City side that on normal terms, full strength, a good couple of weeks under their belt, I would think would brush Spurs aside. But I wouldn't be surprised if this one actually Spurs do get a result out of it.
It's interesting, Bridgie, because I joked at the start that, you know, it feels like 5 minutes ago that we were doing our Euro finals podcast, but that's the reality. Clubs, the big clubs in particular, have had 2 minutes preseason. Even Pep Guardiola said, I don't know what the point of a manager is or a coach during the preseason because I haven't had the team. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of Manchester City we do see, and also how he integrates Jack Grealish. How does he do that when they've got like more creative players than you could possibly ever need in your midfield?
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't see what goes on behind the scenes at Manchester City, but, you know, when they've got the best players, they'll have the best staff at their disposal as well. They'll be monitoring the players on a day-to-day basis, no doubt about it, and make sure they're getting their rest in as much as they need, but still maintaining what they need to do to come back to pre-season. And, you know, you still need, you need games, you need to freshen up. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what City do. And again, with Spurs, like Schwartzy said, the pre-season that they've had has been very, very impressive. They've got a tough game against City, catching them when they could be underdone. But then I look at where Spurs go next. It's Wolves. It's Nuno against his old team. Then you've got Watford. Then you've got Palace. And then we come up against Chelsea. So I think when you look at that as a manager and a coach, that's a nice little start to the Premier League season, them first four matches. And I think Tottenham are far more suited and balanced because they've had a lot more players in pre-season than what Manchester City have. I think it's been very disruptive for all the players that have played in the Euros that went deep into the competition. And not only that, I look at the Spanish team of the 23s and the boy Pedri from Barcelona. That's another huge issue for them. He's played the Euros, he played in the Olympics, and now he's got to get ready to gear off. He's going to be so underdone.
He refused to take a break, by the way. He's reporting for duty this week.
Let's see what he does next summer. He will be needing a break, mate. He might need a break halfway through.
Did anyone notice what Bridgie did there? We've talked about the Premier League title race discussion to open up with, and Bridgie's talking about Spurs.
Well, the reason I was doing that, because I was going to say they're going to get a really, really good start. And they are not going to finish in the top four.
The question is, Bridgie, are you happy with Nuno being the manager? Is he good enough to take Spurs to that next level, which no one's really been able to do? Poch toyed with it, but no one else has really been. Other than that, they haven't quite got there. And with one of the best strikers in the world in their side, who I would say are going to leave.
It's very worrying. But what I will say, Swartzy, I like the fact that Spurs need a rebuild. He's proved that he can do it at Wolves. When he was there, he's had the support. He got the budget to do it. Like I said, with the agent,
Mendes.
Yeah, that's a huge help. I think you've seen that from the signs that are coming in. It's a fresh layer. I didn't mind the football he actually played. It's a lot, even though it's very similar to Mourinho. I think it's a lot more proactive than it is, and I think he will do a good job. Can he win something? I don't think so. Because it's Tottenham Hotspur we are talking about, but I really like the fact that he has taken the job out of other candidates that it was offered to. I've got to say, I'm in the more pro than I am the con, because there was a lot of negativity came from Spurs fans. I didn't mind it at all, to be honest with you, because I was trying to look at the bigger picture of what he's done, and Spurs do need a rebuild. And if that's without Harry Kane, it is without Harry Kane, but he is the man that I believe has got the contacts to bring in good players and play a style that may suit and will suit Tottenham.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So bring it back to the title race then. Does the title race start with Harry Kane, just a one-word answer from the three of you, at Manchester City or Tottenham? Bridgie, you said you would sell him, but is that going to happen?
City.
Tommy?
Yeah, no, I would love to see him at City. I think that will just take them that step closer to the Champions League.
And Schwartzy?
Yeah, City. I don't see him saying, I suppose.
So, Tom, what City were unbelievable.
Hey, Bridgie, you're
year.
Happy with a rebuild. No, Bridgie's happy with a
rebuild.
He just
said you're happy with a rebuild.
He's happy with average, so that's all right.
Is there any chink in City's armour, Tom? Is it going to be the slow start? We're looking at the pros and cons of these title contenders. What hole can you poke in Pep Guardiola's side this year, particularly if they get Kane? And then you've got Grealish, you've got Mahrez, you've got Silva, you've got Foden, you've got Sterling, you've got De Bruyne, you've got Gundogan. Servicing that front line is find a weakness for me. Otherwise, we're giving up. This is the last episode of the season. Weakness.
Yeah, I think you know, if they sign Harry Kane, I think they've just got, you know, they've just got that plus that they potentially didn't have last season. I know Pep wants to play without a nine and that rotation, and De Bruyne, whoever can move into to that front, but. Yeah, I think the only thing I can see is if there's a little bit of unrest. Now, we've heard Bernardo Silva, you know, potentially, you know, wants to leave. And, you know, so if that sort of creeps in a little bit. But I think Pep, you know, with his management skills, they've sorted the back line. Now, you know, John Stones has signed a new 5-year deal. You know, Ruben Dias was tremendous, good goalkeeper. So all the way through, I think they've got the lineup and add Kane to that, it only makes them stronger, I think. So, I think it can only be potentially Bayern, potentially being PSG that could stop them on a European stage.
I think it's
Chelsea.
I think it's going to be a lot closer at the top. I don't think it's going to be as easy. I do think City will win the title again, especially if that Kane deal goes through. However, I do think that Man United and Chelsea are going to be a lot closer this season, pushing them all the way, because what Manchester United have done business-wise, I think is absolutely brilliant as well. If they can get Varane over the line to play alongside Maguire, Sancho, I mean, Swartz used to rave about him every week when he watched him in the Bundesliga for Dortmund. I am so excited about watching this lad play for Manchester United this season. And I just feel that they can challenge. And if Chelsea get Lukaku, which it's done and dusted, yeah, correct?
Medical? Yeah, looks that way, yeah. Yeah, he's there in the medical.
That was the one area I felt like, as a number nine that can hold the ball up, Werner squandered a lot of chances last season. and defensively very, very strong. Midfield, brilliant. And that number nine, that's going to make a huge difference. These two teams are going to challenge, and I think Liverpool are going to fall by the wayside, and I'm having Leicester as the team that will finish fourth. So I've got it down as City, Man United, Chelsea, and then Leicester.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Chelsea is that they've got the depth as well. Like a City, they could play two teams in the Premier League and both sides would do well. Chelsea's the same. So they've got themselves in a great position. I mean, they're talking about Tammy Abraham leaving, going to Roma. Kurt Zouma could possibly be out as well, looks like. They have to balance the books at some stage. I think they're talking about if Harry Kane does go to Manchester City, that Bernardo Silva and Gabriel Jesus will be the two that probably will leave. To try and bring in some more cash. The thing about Harry Kane, just back to that, about going to Manchester City, and you talk about the Man City, Pep Guardiola wants to play with a false nine at times. Listen, Harry Kane has got that in the bag. And we talked about this on the European night after the final. And I still stand by it. England underutilized Harry Kane. He was dropping too deep as a number nine, and they didn't get the best out of him. You've got one of the best strikers in the world, and you used him as a playmaker and was involved in one moment of a game in the first 2 minutes, and then the rest of it was not involved and didn't play to his strengths. Whereas at City, he can play in that role. He's still got enough players around him making the right runs, and he will be effective, very effective. And I think he will be even a better goal scorer if he goes to City with the players that he has around him.
That's actually a really interesting point to bring up. And Johnny's not here to defend himself, so we'll go even harder on it right now. because I'm just thinking, because, you know, at Spurs, he had that sort of synergy with Son. But here he's got potentially four Sons around him to make those runs and going behind. So you're saying there that if he actually does make that move and Pep wants to play in that fluid way, he's just gonna slip into that and almost go to another level.
Yeah, I think that's what they see him as well. I mean, that's why Pep Guardiola has said, that's the only guy I want, because he's got the ability to play both roles. And he can switch in and out of it during a game. It's not like it's one or the other like you had with Aguero. Aguero wasn't a player that would necessarily drop in that hole and be that link-up player. He couldn't really do it. But get him on the edge of the ball and he'll score. And, you know, phenomenal if he was fit. Whereas Harry Kane's got the ability to do both and do both very, very well. Like I said, he's got at City and he knows it himself. I mean, he's got one of the best midfielders, best playmakers in the world in Kevin De Bruyne. So how often does he really even have to drop deep? But the interchange is crucial. I think the ability to have players like, you know, whether it's Mahrez, Sterling, De Bruyne, whoever it is, you know, the list goes on at Manchester City. Whoever swaps and changes and plays that a false number nine, they're going to be effective. They're going to be dangerous. They're going to cause the opposition problems. And Harry Kane, like I said, I think we haven't seen the best of Harry Kane if he goes to Manchester City. We'll see an even better one.
So, by the way, this is the golden boot from a team that didn't finish in the top six. Can we pick a number, a lottery number? How many goals, if he goes to City, how many goals? We'll take a survey. How many goals?
I could see him getting over 40 goals if he goes to City.
What? In all competitions.
Easy. I could see him getting over that easy. And I don't think the assist column will be anywhere near as high as it was at Spurs.
I'll say 30 plus. He'll get into the Shearer and Kevin Phillips category.
Yeah, I can see him getting 20 in the Premier League.
Easy.
Yeah. And then obviously, yeah, you can add 10, 15 on top of that. So yeah, 30, 35.
Let's not get carried away. Davey's not there yet.
You guys have convinced us. We're talking almost in fact now. Tommy, when Bridgie was mentioning Manchester United, I couldn't tell whether you just didn't like what he was saying or whether you were squirming. I saw your face. This is the beauty. Yeah. The punters can't see your face, but I can. You disagree.
Yeah, I still got my doubts. You know, you're still leaning on a Cavani who's turning 35 up front. You know, obviously you got Rashford. You know, you got Greenwood. You got young players and Sancho. I'm excited to. I can't wait to see him in the Premier League.
Well, that was definitely not a negative, because that sounded very, very nice to me.
Yeah, I know, but I still think they're lacking a little bit. You know, a holding midfielder. If they can get a Declan Rice, I think they'll be set. But I still, you know, you were. you're not happy with Liverpool, right? You know, they finished the season strong. They got Van Dijk back, Gomez. You know, they're just a lot stronger. I know they've lost Wijnaldum, but Henderson potentially should be back. And they're back at Anfield with fans. I think that that's a massive thing for them. So actually, with the finish they had to the season, I got Liverpool above Man United.
Oh, wow. I also don't not forget with Liverpool, the issue they have at the moment is Robertson being out as well. So that is a bit of a Robertson being out injured is a bit of a worry, because he is, you know, he's a phenomenal player for them and a very important link up player and provider of opportunity. So that's a little bit of a worry. I think it's even more of a worry than what they had last season with the two centre halves being out.
You think?
Yeah, potentially.
With the squad, Tom, I was actually thinking about Liverpool the other day, where they've obviously let Wijnaldum go. Thiago might come in to replace him. I know they got some youngsters. Jones was excellent at Pires last year as well, if they're looking for that same kind of player. But Thiago, even with Spain and then through the last, he didn't look like a natural fit coming from Bayern, even though we came with such big hype. You confident that question is going to be fine for Liverpool, that the front three are going to fire again this season, front four, if you want to call it that, with Jota and you know, the options there? You know, if we talk about, there's still a few question marks. The irony being last year's weakness of their defence is now probably their strength, because they've got Van Dijk back, Gomez back, and all the signings they made too.
Yeah, no, I agree with you know, he has to step up in midfield. I think he wasn't great at the Euros, coming on for Spain a few times. Thiago, he didn't make a difference really, other than, you know, he was just passing it sideways. But I still think, you know, they got still one of the best managers in the world. You know, and what gives me confidence in Liverpool is the way they finished last season. Yes, they didn't have a great all-round season, but the last 10 games, I think they were unbeaten. And, you know, that's something. And they, again, you know, a lot of players that come into this season fresh as well. And that's equally as important, where other teams will have players who've had a, you know, Euros, Olympics, all that on top. So I think Robertson, again, it doesn't look like it's too serious. It's not like a season ending injury. So they'll have him back at some point. And I still see them as contenders.
I was going to say, Tommy, I've spoke to a lot of Liverpool fans, and they were really, really devastated that Gini had gone. They're a massive fan of Gini. Yeah. What he does going forward, the goals that the important goals he got for them, the attacking style that he had when he was elect, you know, a bit more licensed to go forward. I was so impressed with him, and I think that's a massive loss, because Thiago and Henderson, very, very similar, you know, ball players, where they, like you say, they'll go side to side, they'll try and recycle, break down attacks of the opposition. I feel that position where Gini's been let go, they haven't fulfilled that and replaced that, because he's going to be a huge loss for them and going forward. Yeah, we've got the front three, we've got Jota, but Gini, the fans were absolutely gutted. Really, really hurt them when they saw him go.
I think also you'll see a different Liverpool side, because look, the last 10 games of the season, what Thomas has been referring to is the moment when Jurgen Klopp finally saw sense and went, Fabinho is one of the best holding midfielders in the world, which he said after the Champions League game, when they beat RB Leipzig, and that how much they missed him. And then the very next league game, they put him back at centre-half. And Liverpool struggled with him being there at centre-half towards, you know, the mid part to up until the last 10 games of the season. It didn't work anymore for them. They lost too much in midfield without him being there. And at the fact that Henderson was out, then obviously got injured as well. So that was a massive blow. You played too many players out of position. So when he went with Phillips, and Reece Williams as centre half, it worked. Fabinho back in midfield. So now replace Phillips, replace Reece Williams, and you put Virgil van Dijk, Gomez back at centre halves. You've got two top class centre halves with Fabinho in front. And whether it's Henderson, whether it's Thiago, Liverpool are back to where they were. And the front three are going to get so many more opportunities now. There's that link up was missing last season, and it only came back into play once Fabinho went back in midfield.
Can I change my top four? Because Thomas and Schwartzy have sold it very, very well, because I had Leicester getting in ahead of Liverpool. Tommy nailed it. And it's back at Anfield. Liverpool are back at home with fans. They're going to stay in the top four. Leicester will not get in there. Yeah. Thanks, boys.
Quick change of heart. And do you know what else understated? I mean, Mane and Salah haven't had a Euros. They haven't had an Olympics. Yeah. They're going to be fresh. They've had a preseason.
Coming in fresh. Yeah.
They're going to come back at their athletic best with the, you know, with all the technique as well. So
they might finish third, actually. Keep talking. They'll be champions soon.
While Bridgie goes back on his tips and checks the slip. Manchester United and Chelsea, just to finish off there. We heard from Thomas doubts about Manchester United. Schwartzy, your thoughts there. Solskjaer's had a year now. He's got the contract. He knows he's got the backing. He's been backed in the market. Does he get that trophy? Any trophy? Does he peg the gap to Manchester City?
I hear a lot of people over here, various pundits saying they need a centre-half and need another attacking player. I mean, listen, I think, like Bridgie said earlier on, I'm a big fan of Jadon Sancho. I thought he's been brilliant at Dortmund, but I still think they've missed the boat. I think Thomas mentioned it, holding midfield player. Mm-hmm. They definitely need another midfield player and also a number nine. I mean, listen, I reckon everyone should put some money together and let Haaland go to Manchester United just so it becomes more competitive. And all of a sudden, we're going to have three or four, five teams really competing. Because you imagine Haaland there, Kane at Man City, Lukaku at Chelsea, Messi's at PSG, Bayern have got, you know, Lewandowski, of course, Juve, Ronaldo out in his wheelchair. And then, mate, how brilliant is it going to be, honestly? Let's hope that Haaland goes to Manchester United.
Haaland will not go to Manchester United for two reasons. One is his dad hates Manchester United, Alfie. And two, he hates Manchester United.
Yeah, but do you reckon he will, though? Like, I don't know. Is it real like that still? Like, is he going to turn it down for that?
Man United are smart. They waited for Sancho. It saved them a lot of money because, you know, Dortmund have got that handshake agreement with their players. Stay one more year and you can get your...
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
They waited for Sancho. They did that. I think there's going to be a lot of teams scrambling for Haaland. I think... Would he go to Bayern Munich over Manchester United?
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting one because he has been linked now. There's talk. Bayern, Salihamidzic has been asked about him and said, of course we like him. Of course we would be interested, but he's a Dortmund player and everything else. The way the Germans do business over there as well is very different to what we see over in England or very much most other parts around Europe, is that they do it in a very proper way and make contact with the club and they negotiate, and they generally, before the end of the season, already announce they've signed a player and they've got 6 months still to play, which is just incredible next season. Don't put it beyond Bayern. I mean, they are more than capable to do it. If they need to do it and they want to do it, they could get it done. Would Haaland go?
With Lewandowski in there as well.
Yeah, because Lewandowski, but listen, it's the ruthlessness of the game, isn't it? I mean, Lewandowski is in incredible shape, form. But what Bayern fell into a trap a couple of years back where they waited too long to replace players. Rather than still replacing players when they're still at their peak, and they may play one or two more years at that level, maybe even 3 years, but they've replaced them already with the next generation, with the next top players, and they fell off the pace, especially in European football a little bit. Certainly not in domestic football, but they did Europe in the European scene. And then all of a sudden there's a big influx of young players coming through again. So they're very much conscious about not making the same mistakes, holding on to players too long. Lewandowski obviously is an exception to the rule. And ultimately, if he keeps scoring, keeps staying fit, he's difficult to replace. But if they go and get Haaland, there's no doubt in my mind they'll play Haaland ahead of Lewandowski if they go out and spend that sort of money on Haaland.
Am I right in saying that has he got a transfer fee kicking in from next season?
Yes. It reduces heavily. Like it's about 74 or 75 million euros. So it drops down dramatically. So Dortmund, what do they pay for him? Was it 18 or 20 million or 28 million or something? Like very little. I mean, it was still a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not huge. And they've got, I think there's a buyout clause or something like 75 million, I think it is, as of next season. So they're prepared.
all the teams know that as well. All the teams know that as well.
Of course they do.
Because it's Dortmund. They do the handshake. You've seen that happen with Sancho. They say to players, give us that one more year out of use. And then that clause kicks in. So I think it's a very, very honest approach to what they do, but they actually allow it to happen. Clubs know that. And it's just.
Well, it's the model, isn't it? Absolutely. It's a model.
It's going to be a lottery for teams next season.
You know, that's the thing. That's what teams want to try and avoid. So if they're trying to get Haaland now, they'd rather pay 50 million more to avoid that lottery, to avoid the scrap then to try and get a signature, maybe 5, 6, 7 clubs rather than just them being the standalone club prepared to pay over the top to get, you know, to get a player that, what is he, 22 years old? So, you know, and his goal score, what is it, 60-60 he scored? Yeah, it's not a bad going, is it?
Hat trick again, his first game, eh, in the cup. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, listen, it's especially in the Bundesliga, for Bayern Munich, it's a sure thing. It's a no-brainer. If they can make it work, I mean, I'd be very, very surprised if they wouldn't be doing everything they possibly can to sign him, because it's a no-brainer. He's a proven goal scorer in the Bundesliga, and it would make Bayern a better side.
A quick one from me. If I had the option of 150 million for Kane at his age and 150 million for Haaland.
Well, of course. There's no brainer.
I would take Haaland.
Yeah.
Of course you would.
Or if you can't get either of them at that moment, and Haaland's 22 in about 10 days. So bang on, Schwartzy. If you can't get those two, you go get Romelu Lukaku, don't you? Now, you kept me 43 minutes waiting to talk about Romelu Lukaku, gents. But as we record, the deal is just about done. For some $132 million more than Chelsea sold him for all those years ago.
That's the hard thing. That's the hard thing to digest for me. I'm a massive fan. I think, you know, he's a top guy. I was there at Chelsea when he was still young, knocking on the door. But they sold him. And it's a bit like Man United with Paul Pogba. I just hope that doesn't happen to them. I don't think it will. Lukaku, for me, is a better player in his position than Paul Pogba is in his position. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and what is he as a person? Like, you obviously know him better. He seems like a great person.
A lot of the Belgian guys, you know, whether it's Kevin De Bruyne, Eden Hazard, you know, I was very fortunate to play a lot, you know, alongside with Lukaku. They're very, 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 very confident in their own ability. You know, it's that borderline arrogance, but it's a good thing because they're so good at what they do and they know they're so good at what they do and they're able to deal with pressure. I mean, Romelu took some time, certainly at Chelsea. When he first arrived, I mean, he was a million miles off the pace, really, when he first arrived. I remember playing, I was at Fulham at the time, we played against Chelsea in a cup game and at Stamford Bridge, and Romelu was started the game. And honestly, it was... He looked like a fish out of water, like Bambi on ice. He was so off the pace, and he got substituted in the game, had hardly an impact at all. And the evolution of him, the way he evolved, going out alone, doing what he did at West Brom, then going to Everton, obviously made him into the player that he became. It's a bit like the Salah thing, isn't it? It's a bit like Salah leaving Chelsea for a nominal kind of fee, going away, doing incredibly well, and obviously Liverpool bought him. But had Chelsea done the same thing, or Kevin De Bruyne, same thing. There's a number of players that Chelsea have done that to. And the thing is, I suppose, when you look at Chelsea, you go, okay, you know what? We got that one wrong. And maybe he was never going to develop into the player that he is today had he have stayed here, because of the limited opportunities to play because of the players he was coming up against. So he had to go away for them to bring him back again. And even though they have to pay over the odds for him, they pay over the odds for him. But they're prepared to do so because you're guaranteed a certain number of goals.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep this one short.
Personality, I was just going to say, Schwartzy, can you see from his personality that you knew then how he's become the elite striker that he is now? No doubt that he wasn't going to go off that.
You can hear it now when he talks. There's times where he's talking about how he feels he doesn't get the respect that he deserves, that he feels like that he's not regarded as one of the best players, best strikers on the planet. People talk about Lewandowski, Ronaldo, whatever it is, Messi, Harry Kane. They don't talk about Lukaku in the same breath. And more recently, towards the back end of the season, he was quite outspoken about that and about how he felt that people underrated him and didn't give him the credit he deserved. And it certainly comes across at times as arrogant, but he's got incredible amounts of self-belief. And the way that he's evolved and the records, his records speak for themselves. So he's gone, you know, even at United, people talk about how it didn't work out for him. He was still, for me, I said at the time, they were mad to get rid of him. I said they should have kept him and got rid of Pogba at the time. And I think I'm right still. I think that would have been the right decision. I think he would have been the player that he was then at Inter Milan at Manchester United. I think they completely misread the situation. They made the wrong decision. And hopefully that'll benefit Chelsea now. So I'm not surprised because he had everything. It's just whether or not he could fine tune it, whether he could get it under control, whether he could deliver on the big stage. And he's showing that he has been able to do it. Hence the reason why Chelsea's prepared to go out and spend that sort of money on him.
It's amazing. It makes him, cumulative transfers, the most expensive player in football history, going past Neymar, when you add up all the various high-profile transfers he's had. Everyone talked about Chelsea probably knocking on the door after the Champions League win last year. Are they the biggest threat to Manchester City? What does Lukaku's addition, Bridgie, do to this side in terms of elevating them to the next level with more time to prepare under Tuchel than coming in, you know, with a 4 months left in the season last year?
Yeah, I'm very excited by Lukaku for the reason that I admire him so much. Schwartzy has talked about his qualities on the field. I didn't know how amazing he was off the field as well. Just to see him in the Premier League again, playing at the best football I've seen him play in his career. That is absolutely so exciting for the Premier League. It's exciting for the Chelsea fans as well, because that is that one position where I felt last season Chelsea could have really put their authority down if they had had that number nine. Werner was missing too many chances, Dave. This guy, it'll give them a completely different dimension as a number nine who can run. I mean, Werner's quick, don't get us wrong. This guy has the strength, the ability, plays with his back to goal as well. I like what he is all about. Are they going to challenge? I've said it's going to be so much closer at the top of this title challenge between Manchester United, Chelsea, and Manchester City. I've gone with City, United, and Chelsea. I honestly think you could probably, if Kane deal doesn't go through, you could throw them three up and just say, you know what it is, I'm just going to enjoy watching this title race. I don't think it's going to be as plain sailing as everybody thinks, because I feel that was the one piece of the jigsaw that Tuchel has looked at, where he said, I know what I need, I know what I want, here's a list of the players in that number nine position, and he's got his man. Because everywhere else, I feel they're very, very, very strong. And under Tuchel, he's shown that he can go and win things. Unlike Frank gave them a great stability. He brought the youngsters through and nurtured them. But Tuchel's shown that to be the world-class, top-class manager, you've got to be able to deal with the egos. This man knows how to do it. And you could see his style of play straight away.
That's where Solskjaer is let down as well. So that's what he doesn't have. I don't think he has the ability to deal with the big personalities. I think we've seen that at United. He hasn't dealt with the goalkeeping situation well. He hasn't come to a decision on that. I think it's between City and Chelsea. And I think if Chelsea do get Lukaku, which looks like it's going to be done, and say City don't get Kane, I actually think Chelsea will have enough to win the league. And they could be quite a bit ahead. And, you know, depending on how players have recovered from the Euros for Chelsea, because obviously Chelsea had a lot of players playing, whether it was Euros, whether it was playing away in different parts of the world, whether it's Pulisic with the USA, whatever, you know, the guys have been out and about a lot. But I think Chelsea, this is their season when they've got a big, big chance to really, really go for it and back up the Champions League win, which came as a little bit of a surprise, for sure. And Tuchel's got something over Pep at the moment. Mm-hmm. And he knows the big games. He knows how to deal with the big, big name players, like you said, Bridgie. And he's certainly got big name players at Chelsea.
It's going to be bloody exciting either way.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that the way, you know, the pressure that Lukaku will take off Werner, so then he becomes a complementary piece. You're looking at Havertz, who's going to take another step. He's looking to build confidence. Ziyech has looked, good in preseason. And yes, you still got Kante. You still got that great midfield. Jorginho.
Yeah. I think they're really going to struggle, them too.
The thing is, what's interesting, what you said there, Thomas, Havertz and Werner, for example, certainly with Havertz, the price tag last season, I think, weighed a lot on his shoulders. Then he got COVID. You know, during COVID times, it was so much more difficult for these guys. Let's not forget how young he is as well, right? So he's only a very young man still. So I think the change was massive for him. The circumstances, COVID, everything else, price tag. Now you got Lukaku, who's going to be a bigger price tag. He's going to be Chelsea's record signing. He's got big enough shoulders to carry that. Whereas I think Havertz, it was weighing massively on him, all the expectation. And we did see him show more consistency towards the end of the season, almost like, right, I've got nothing to lose now. I've got to go out there. The manager keeps backing me, keeps giving me enough opportunities. I've got to give something. It's got to find something. Whereas Werner struggled still a bit with it. But you're right. I think Lukaku is going to take so much pressure off these guys. And Lukaku loves it.
So do City have a weakness if they don't get Kane?
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely. I think they become a little bit too predictable. And they've only got one way of playing then. That's the issue for me. I like to see a team that's got a couple of different ways to play, you know, falling back on different type of systems. And Chelsea will certainly have that with Lukaku in their side. City, they don't have Harry Kane. They don't have, for me, they don't have the ability to change things too much.
Thomas has talked about Man United having a weakness, he felt. Do Chelsea have a weakness? If I don't see one.
It's hard to see.
You know, cooks in, guys. How do you fit all the cooks in?
Well, the interesting, you know, that's the thing as well. That's the challenge, obviously, Tuchel has, is how does he deal with all the big name players? How does he keep everyone on board? How does he keep everyone happy? The interesting thing is going to be for me this season is how Edouard Mendy performs. Because last season, there wasn't a lot of expectation. He was an unknown, come in, right? Little bit of money really to spend on a goalkeeper these days, and it's almost like, right, I remember speaking to Petr Cech about it. He's got the ability. It's whether or not he can deal with the club, whether he can deal with the pressure, and certainly he's come through in that flying colours. There's no doubt about it at all. So the second season, as Thomas will tell you as well, and Bridgie, you'll know exactly the same thing. You performed at a level, you exceeded expectation. Now, all of a sudden, the bar is at a certain level now. Okay, right. Now, that's the expectation. So can he then reach those levels now from this next season and perform at that level week in, week out and deliver the Premier League title, which is what Chelsea will be demanding as well?
Interesting. I didn't expect some doubts over Mendy there. So that's an interesting thought there and one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I've got a doubt necessarily. It's just a logical kind of next thought. Okay, where do I look at Chelsea and go, okay, where is their potential for a weakness? And for me, it still is in that goalkeeping position only because he's so new and he's still a lot of him is unknown still. And he was phenomenal for Chelsea last season. Now it's more difficult, I believe, always the second season around. I think it's always a lot more difficult when people have a certain expectation of your performances.
Yeah, so we found a potential hole in Chelsea. So you guys have convinced me that this title race is well and truly on this year. You've all gone with City, but we've got some complete conjecture over. We don't know whether Harry Kane's coming, so that's a big asterisk. Schwartz's got Chelsea second. Bridgie had Manchester United second. Let's go through your top fours. What's yours, Bridgie?
Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, and it was Leicester. But after listening to you three guys, I've gone with Bridget. Liverpool.
So easily swayed.
Always, always.
At least we can't say City on the fence. It just jumps off. It.
I'm
going to
stick with Leicester. There you go. I'll stick with Leicester.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Hang on. I've got to confirm this because if this goes on the social media graphics, I want your right version out there, Bridgie.
I said it last night. Yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
This is your third shot. We're giving you three shots at this in the 45 minutes.
I've missed a lot of chances and a lot of shots in my time, so a third one I will take. City, Manchester United, Chelsea, Leicester. There you go.
Ooh, and Thomas completely disagrees with that.
I've got City as well, and with Kane, for sure. I think Chelsea is a lot closer, like Schwartzy said. So I've got them second. Then I've got Liverpool, and then I've got Man United because I still have question marks and I still think Solskjaer as well is a little bit of a question mark. So I've got them fourth.
And we haven't even spoken, I mean, to just to while I get yours, Rorty, I mean, you mentioned Pogba two or three times, but that whole midfield thing that Thomas talked about, it comes down to that again. It's the Fernandes, Pogba protection in behind. It's not the same as France. That whole thing still is there despite all the signings. So that, I guess, will influence, I would imagine, part of your top four as well.
It will, yeah. I haven't officially said that Manchester City are going to win the league, have I? So I think because Chelsea are pretty much guaranteed Lukaku's thing is done, unless there's a major issue with his medical, which I can't see that even being possible. He's done. So I'm actually going to say, and I know people are going to say, oh, it's his old club, and of course he's going to say it, but I think winning the Champions League last season, with the season that they had, in 5 months, this guy's come in and pulled a squad of players together that was so disjointed, so divided, and he's created this unity amongst the players. And he did it at PSG. He did it incredibly well at PSG. I actually think with Lukaku as the addition, and I'm going to say Mendy's going to play well, even though I've still got a question mark over it. So I'm going to say Chelsea's going to win the league and Manchester City are going to finish second. And then it's probably United, then Liverpool.
Hey, Schwartz, you did not have to pay your late fee by telling me Chelsea were going to win the league and butter it up. And
No, I'm confident. I'm confident. You look at Chelsea's squad, and I know Manchester City's got a phenomenal squad as well. But I mean, Tuchel's got it over Guardiola at the moment and has for some time. I fancy it. I really do.
Schwartzy, when you were talking then, you were talking about Chelsea. The listeners won't be able to see, obviously, our reactions on here, but to see you and hear you talking like that, I'm watching Dave Wiener on the Zoom camera.
This face cannot sparkle. Look at this face. It doesn't sparkle, but it comes close to whatever that is.
You know, I think the key is as well, you know, when you've got such a good squad, and Chris Tuchel has shown the last five months of last season is that how well he's able to unify the squad. He's going to need everyone because he wants to perform on every level, right? So with Pep, there's already cracks evolve, you know, sort of appearing in terms of whether Jesus stays. I mean, you can't be happy if Harry Kane, there's always talk about Harry Kane coming in. Aguero's gone. Jesus still finds himself on the bench because they're playing false number nines and Jesus is not playing. He's playing Torres up front instead of Jesus. Bernardo Silva, a lot of talk of him going. There is a bit of disharmony, I think. Some players are not quite happy because they don't feel like the manager really, really, really backs them. Laporte's going to be an interesting one because he went with Diaz and Stones. And I don't think Laporte's going to be a happy bunny sitting on the bench regularly for Man City. And I know he does do his rotation thing, but I still don't know if that's going to be enough for some players. Whereas at Chelsea, again, whether or not into his... sort of the new season, are the players going to be happy with that rotation? But what I've seen at Chelsea is every time he does it, the players are up for it and the unity they showed, the performances towards the back end of last season and Lukaku, yeah, for me, Chelsea.
Brilliant. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Now, no surprise, the four of us have absolutely blown on for about 40 minutes on the title race, but I'm alive and kicking for the season, so it's good for everybody. We still want to touch on a bit of the other stuff, so we're going to surge through that now before this recording dies on us in a little bit. Fantastic stuff, great predictions, and I'm absolutely pumped for the season from there. Now, Bridgie, you nearly waylaid our early discussion by getting Spurs into the title chat. So now I'm going to ask you guys, who are the teams knocking on the door? You've mentioned Leicester. You've prematurely mentioned Spurs. I want to get a bit of a gist for... Are we going to get a repeat of the Leicester-West Ham, let's call it fairy tale last year, where they both performed and kept the season really, really interesting for long parts? To you first, Bridgie. We touched on Spurs.
I'm going to keep
Leicester.
Short and sweet. I just like what Rodgers is all about. I like the fact that Leicester in the Charity Shield showed that they could nullify Manchester City. They got the result. They got the penalty. Iheanacho, a player that I very, very much admire now. He's coming into his own. It looks like a superb replacement for Vardy when his legs finally run out, which I don't think they're going to. I think it was Fofana got a nasty injury. Is that correct?
Fofana, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Next year he's back.
Yeah, that wasn't pretty, but I really like what they're about. I think they can go again. Whereas I look at West Ham under Moyes, I don't think they're going to be able to repeat what they were about this season. And as for Spurs and Arsenal, I think both clubs are going to have much better seasons this year than they did last season. No doubt about it. So I think if there's anybody that's going to be falling by the wayside, West Ham is my pick.
And why is that? If that would happen, Thomas, do you fancy them sticking around? Do you think Moyes can keep them solid enough? Is Lingard an X factor that they maybe haven't quite replaced, that people, you know, he really took them to another level when he went there last year?
I think he added to it. You know, he obviously came in with a bang and scored goals and assists. And, you know, I think for them, you know, I'm not a big fan of Moyes. I think, yeah, you know, even though he did well last season, I have to take the hat off to him. And they've got some good players in the squad. But a second season syndrome, you know, can he keep the fire under the kettle? I'm not too sure. I don't think they've added enough. You know, they need to keep hold of Declan Rice. You know,
they worry me defensively.
Yeah, I still think that they'll be in that running. They'll be in with Leeds, Tottenham, Arsenal. I'm sure they'll be in that top half. But, you know, to have a chance to break in like in the top four like they did last season, nah, I can't see it. I only see Leicester as a possible chance if they have a really good season.
So they've got Europa League to worry about. Arsenal do not, Schwartzy. Is this the opportunity for them to get that midweek momentum? I mean, it worked for Chelsea 4 or 5 years ago when they dropped out of Europe entirely too, and Conte rebuilded them.
Yeah, but Chelsea had a far, far better squad than Arsenal. I mean, Chelsea capitulated the season before. It was players, they didn't have to change very much other than a manager, and the players reacted. So I just don't think you compare the situations. Yes, certainly I think Arsenal, it would probably help them. Ben White, you know, is he a good signing? 50 million, I don't know.
He's outstanding.
I think he's a good player. Sorry?
He is absolutely outstanding. Leeds.
No, he's a good player, but is he 50 million? You know, is Arsenal able to spend 50 million on a player like that? You know, I don't know. The question for me is as well is if Arsenal get James Maddison, because that's not going away. That's supposedly James Maddison has also indicated he would be up for the move, which is interesting. So he's a good character as well. I like him. I've interviewed him a few times after the game. He's very, very thoughtful, very switched on, and not a stock standard answer of questions. And he seems like a real character. And I'd like to see him at Arsenal. Actually, I'd like to see the challenge, how he took on the challenge of playing at Arsenal. Because let's be honest, right? Leicester are far better than Arsenal, man for man, what they've accomplished. Even if you talk about, I mean, stadiums, training complexes. I mean, I don't think anyone comes close to Leicester's training complex around Europe at the moment. I mean, because it is the latest, but it is incredible. But in terms of names, clubs, stature, Arsenal still are on paper a bigger club. And I think for someone like James Maddison, I think he is someone that could lead a charge for Arsenal. But him alone is not enough. But I think he could still make a big difference with Aubameyang, Lacazette, you know, these guys, Smith Rowe. You know, they've got Saka. They've got some exciting, exciting plays. They just need that link-up player. And James Maddison, I think, could be that player.
But can we agree that the honeymoon is over now? I think the pressure is on Arteta now. They have to produce. You know, he has to do a lot better. He has to show that they're moving in the right direction, and you know, especially with no Europe, so they'll be fresh, have an advantage over, you know, a fair few of the other teams.
So for honeymoon period is certainly well and truly over with.
Is it still fair, guys, to call it a big six? Is it a big four, and now Spurs and Arsenal have to earn their stripes to get back into that echelon? Or as you hinted, Schwartzy, you still see Arsenal having that stature that a player like Maddison would leave a European club in Leicester to go to Arsenal?
They would. I still think players will leave other clubs, like the rest of the clubs, for the likes of an Arsenal or even a Tottenham, right? But I still think it is only a top four. I don't think it is a top. Well, maybe it's a top five, because Leicester is certainly in the top five for me. And I think they're almost a banker to be top five at the very least, right? And then there's the rest. And we've not talked about him yet. And I'm also going to say that I think Villa are an outside chance to be there or thereabouts again this season. I like what they've done. You know, Buendia, I think he's an exciting player. It'd be interesting to see. You know, he didn't quite do it at Norwich in the Premier League, but did very incredibly well in the Championship. So it's another step up, of course, but he's got better players around him than he did over at Norwich. The other player I really like is another player that played in the Bundesliga, Leon Bailey. He's rapid. He's physically strong, and he'll get on the end of things and he'll score goals. So I think he adds a bit extra to them as well. The old head, Ashley Young, I think he's a good signing to add to that quality in the Premier League. So I think Villa are a side that are going to do well.
So your old mob, Thomas, they're not as... They might have a better team, even though they've lost their superstar.
Yeah, I think they have. I think they're really set up. They've got a good squad. Like Schwartz, you said, Danny Ings. We have to we have to think about him as well. You know, he's come in. I think he just adds something extra along. Up front. And yeah, you know, Martinez in goal. I think all the way through, they're looking strong, and I think they can live without Grealish. You know, it's not like it's Messi who's left Aston Villa. You know, Grealish is a very good player. We can't get around it, but he's not the only reason why Villa has done well, and they've got a lot of the youth system as well. The youth team won. The youth cup last season, so they've got great players coming through as well that can add a little bit extra. So I see Villa as definitely in that top half.
I think it gives an opportunity now that Jack Grealish has gone for other players to shine, to take now the responsibility on, because I think beforehand it was pretty much just on Jack Grealish's shoulders. John McGinn, important that he stays fit. You know, the combination of Buendia, McGinn, Traore, listen, I think he's going to get better. He's a talented player. Still a bit rough around the edges, but I still think there's more to come. And, of course, what, you know, Thomas mentioned Danny Ings. You know, he's a player that certainly, and there's no disrespect to Southampton, is a better player than at Southampton. Is Villa the next step up? I think so. And I think he will be a big threat and a big plus for Villa.
At Everton, Carlo Ancelotti surprised them, got his job back at Madrid. Rafa Benitez comes in, polarizing appointment, both in terms of style and his history. And is that going to work?
No.
No. I think a lot of it hinges on the start. I think, you know, obviously the fans will be there watching with the history. It's a club that's had five managers in 5 years. There's been a few question marks over the squad character over the last season. They've still got good players there. Ben Godfrey is a great talent. Rikarlison up front. James Rodriguez, can you get the best out of him? I've got question marks. I think they're a team that could sink if they don't get a good start.
Yeah, but the crowd there too. Geez, that could be a bit. I remember being at, I think it was before you were there, Schwartz, when Rafa was at Stamford Bridge, and I was at a nil all draw when he was the caretaker, and the crowd turned on him because of his style of play. If that happens at Everton, it's just going to be a torrid little run there.
Rafa was still hoping for lockdown without the fans when he took over Everton. Believe you me, he has got to win something in his reign for the fans to accept him. Otherwise, he will never be accepted.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, I think on the preseason game, they lost 4-0, didn't they? Who was it, Man United?
Just this week? I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and there were sections of the Everton fans already giving him grief. If anyone's going to be able to handle it, he's going to be able to handle it, right? So he did the Chelsea thing, fans turned on him. He's able to handle it. He's not going to like it, but he'll be able to handle it. I just look at the signings, you know, I mean, obviously the purse strings have been tight, and they, in theory, they've got a good squad. They've got they've got some really good players. You know, listen, I like Alan. I think he's a really good player. We haven't seen the best of him at Everton. Moise Keane back, You know, are we going to see the Moise Keane that performed incredibly well at PSG? There's certainly an opportunity for him there. Andros Townsend, is it now too late in his career? You know, I think he's, I've always been a big fan of him. I thought he's, you know, a really talented player, but didn't quite go on to that next level. Demarai Gray, I was with him at Leicester. Again, another talented, talented player. We signed him from Birmingham City. Just didn't take that next step up. I don't think they're necessarily going to take Everton any further than what they did accomplish last season. And let's be honest, they were disappointing. Considering the investment they've made, they've been very, very disappointing.
And their home record, my God, they can't do that with the crowds there. Speaking of crowds, Bridgie, Ellen Road, you must be so excited to see what happens with the fans get to go welcome Marcelo Bielsa into a Premier League stadium for the first time. Great insight from you on the Optusport app this week about why you think it will not be second-year syndrome. Can you, and everyone can jump on and have a read of that during the week. Can you explain to us in a sentence why you believe it's onwards and upwards for Leeds?
I think if Leeds had a lost Bielsa, it could have been. Bielsa doesn't have mediocrity. He doesn't accept second best. The players know that. The staff know that. He's got everybody on their toes. And I feel that with what he brings to Leeds United, the fitness levels, the players understand their roles now. And obviously the Barcelona Firpo coming in as well, I thought was a fantastic signing. Bringing that in and also getting Harrison. He's been on loan from Manchester City. I think the fans were delighted that he has actually signed now. It's not like a new signing because he's been there. He's been the mainstay. I just feel there could be one more way I'd like to see, and that would be a striker, because Bamford is the goal scorer. Rodrigo is not that man that's going to replace him. He's been absolutely brilliant. When he drops into that deeper position because of his work rate, his energy levels, his movement. And the big one for me, they kept Rafinha. I thought there would have been a lot of clubs swooping to get this player. They've kept it together. And now what you are going to see, some of these players have not played at Elland Road in front of a full house. So when that place is rocking, I'll tell you what, I was chatting the other day about this. Since some of them European nights when Lucas Radebe scored in the last minute to get us through to the quarterfinals in a game, there was Boya scored against AC Milan to make it 1-0 at Elland Road. It's just a very, very scary place for some oppositions to go to when Elland Road is rocking and the fans want to be back there. The animosity has gone. I just feel like everything is geared up for Leeds to have another very, very good season. I'm not going to say they're going to emulate or go and be in a top four team. This is a team that got promoted. Their goal was to stay in the league. They did that very convincingly, and now it's time to go out and replicate that. And Calvin Phillips is still there. What a Euros he's had. So all in all, I'm very, very happy with what he's done.
He's going to come back 6 foot high, you know, 6 foot tall because of the way he performed at the Euros. Gareth Southgate completely backed him. So he's a major plus for you, of course. I mean, the only thing that worries me about any team that has a manager that's that intense and puts that much pressure on players to deliver, whether it's physically, mentally, or both, and more often than not, when you have one, it's the other as well. So the physical and mental pressure to deliver every week, every time, I think is tough if you don't bring enough fresh blood in. And that's the one thing that worries me a little bit about Leeds at the moment, is they haven't really brought anyone else in. I mean, yes, Firpo's come in. You mentioned Jack Harrison, but he was there last season. He isn't a new signing, really, even though technically he is. The rest are there. And that's the only thing that worries me.
I do know that Victor Otta, that is there, his recruitment is sensational. Bielsa was his man he wanted to get. He got him. When they recruit, the whole plan and the vision of the club, they know what they're after. I will say that I know they're trying to bring in two players. I don't know who it is. I know it's on the card, but Bielsa has just been spotted. I don't know where this has come from, but there's actually footage of Bielsa going into Manchester City's stadium today. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe there's a loan player coming in because they've already got Jack Harrison signed. So again, there's definitely things still going on, and we will see a player, if not two players, come to Elland Road before the transfer window.
I think that's key. Yeah, I think that's key for Leeds. I think they, as a squad, it's like anything. When you start a new season, it's you always need a bit of freshening up. You always need a couple of new faces to try and help you go to another level. So whether it's a bit more experience and better quality players, you need that as a group. I've been at times at Middlesbrough where you've had a really quiet off-season, pre-season in terms of new personnel coming in, and there's always a bit of an uneasiness around the squad. You kind of go, well, you know where you're a bit deficient in certain areas, and you kind of go, right, we need this and we need that. What are they doing? Why haven't they brought someone else in? And I don't think, you know, Leeds is no different to any other club. All the clubs will be the same. Players will be doing the same thing.
So we've spoken Leeds. Yeah. They're going to in that tier.
Yeah. Tom, we're good. Can I just add something? Yeah, no, yeah. For me, the question mark is Patrick Bamford. I think that's, can he come up with that amount of goals? I don't know how many times we talked about, and Bridget, you mentioned it as well, that his confidence, he struggles when the fans are there. I think, you know, Rodrigo, can he be a complementary piece in that jigsaw? I think without those goals that he scored last season, I think Leeds will struggle at least to get in the top six.
Okay, so how are we going to split this going down? We haven't spoken about your Southamptons, your Newcastles, your Wolves, your Brightons. What's the gap? What's the split between talking about this sort of mid-table or pushing for the lower European positions that we've just been speaking about and the relegation race? Are we going to have a surprise packet out of a Brentford? Will Norwich have learnt their lesson from a couple of years ago? Will Watford have learnt their lessons? We'll go through, we'll start with Bridgie, go Tom, then Schwartzy. How are we splitting up the rest of the pack in terms of that? Who do you see folding into which field?
I've got my relegated teams as Watford. I don't think they have got enough clout and I don't think they'll have learnt their lessons, because I still hear grumblings and I still got some info from behind the scenes that it's still not set up and geared up as a club should be. It's all about the top end, the first team squad, should we say. Whereas I look at a Leicester City that came up and now they have gone from having a first team squad that went on to win, and they went and spent in the academy, they went and spent overseas, they went and spent, you know, in the right areas to make them a sustainable and stable club. Watford haven't done that. I think they're still going to be vulnerable. Brentford I've got going down as well, unfortunately. I think they will surprise a lot of teams this season with their style of play. If they come in with the same mentality, can they do a Leeds United in their first season or a Sheffield United? I don't think they can. I think they will get found out, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong. If there's any team I want to be proven wrong by, it is Brentford, definitely. And Burnley. I've got Dyche's men going down this season as well. So they're my three going down. I think Norwich have learned a lot. I like what they've done recruitment-wise, and I think they will survive this time because they've kept the manager, they've had faith in him, and he will repay them by keeping them up.
I'm looking forward to these rebuttals, judging by the facial expressions. See you first, Thomas.
Yeah, no, I got Watford as well for similar reasons. You know, I would love to see Brentford staying up. You know, I think what Thomas Frank has done there, you know, they nearly missed out a couple of, like 2 years ago, then finally came up. I just think they're going to lack quality. You know, I don't think they've signed enough players. I love the players that he has in the squad. I think the mentality he wants from the players, a little bit, like Bridget said, Bielsa, they have a certain way of playing, high energy. I just don't think they'll have enough. And I think Burnley as well. I don't, you know, I think finally Dyche, the lack of quality. And
have we got the same three?
Yeah, because, to be fair, I don't like seeing Burnley play as well. So
the only team in the Premier League, I've said this before, if they played in my front garden or back garden, I would shut the curtains or the blinds. I don't want to see that crap.
Yeah, no, and it's not Sean Dyche. With what he has to work with and the amount of money he's been given, and you know, it's tough for him. And he's made the most of it. You know, fair play to him. But I think, sadly, this is the end of the road.
Over to you, Schwartzy.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I mean, Sean Dyche, the junior Mourinho, there's no chance in the world that he's going to get relegated. He's going to keep them up again. He is the man. He's the expert. I just don't see it. I think Burnley will be all right. I also think Brentford will stay up. I think Brentford will do a bit of a Leeds, actually. I like their whole model. I like everything about the way they play football. I think Ivan Toney will score goals. You know, Ivan Toney said their goal is to win the Premier League. And, you know, the thing about that is, right, we can laugh about it because it is funny, right? And I did have a chuckle. But, you know, what was it, 6 years ago, if anyone had said that, you'd be just going, what an idiot. You know, how stupid. Why would you even say something like that, you know? But then Leicester went and did it. And you kind of go, well, you know, Brentford are no different to what Leicester were like. If anything, Brentford are probably better equipped in the way that they play. There's more of an identity than Leicester had at that time. So I fancy Brentford to have enough. The team that worries me again is Norwich. Listen, I know like Billy Gilmore's gone there, and I'm a big fan of Billy Gilmore. I think he did very, very well during the Euros in particular for Scotland. I thought he was very good. I still don't think it's enough. They've signed Josh Sargent, the American internationals at Schalke. He was at Werder Bremen, I think it was. I've seen him play quite a lot, and I don't see enough. I don't think it's going to make Norwich a better side in the Premier League. I might be proven wrong. You know, I hope I'm proven wrong. But I just don't see overall that Norwich have enough. I know, you know, Todd Cantwell's there and he's a good player. And some would say it's probably they're fortunate enough still to have hold, you know, keep hold of him. But I still don't think they've got enough Norwich to stay in the league. I agree with you with Watford. I think Watford are 4 or 5 games away from sacking the manager. I think Zisco Munez is the number one candidate for me for being the sack. Because if he gets off to a bad start, he could be gone after 5 or 6 games. And that's just the way Watford operate, and that's the way they've done it under these owners. And the other club that really worries me, and for a number of reasons, it's Crystal Palace. Mm-hmm. Patrick Vieira hasn't set the world alight wherever he's been as a manager, really. Palace are one of those clubs, 5 years in the Premier League. Roy had them for 4 years, which has been amazing. He's a manager, and I remember hearing what they were talking about in terms of how do they replace Roy. And the challenge was to find a younger version of Roy almost in terms of maturity, ability to handle the pressure, not panic, because Palace will go through a run of 4 or 5 games they don't win and the fans will go crazy. They'll get anxious and they can't have a manager that's going to panic. And I worry about Patrick Vieira being able to handle it and knowing what to do at the right time and keep Palace in the Premier League. So I fear that it could all go pear-shaped very quickly for Palace. And if it does, it could go pear-shaped very, very quickly.
And if it does go pear-shaped early on, Swartzy, bring in Ted Lasso, I say. Bring him in.
Very well, actually, that's the last thing I was going to ask. For the clubs that might not get relegated but who have high expectations, you've touched on that. Patrick Vieira will be under massive pressure early doors. We haven't mentioned Steve Bruce. We haven't mentioned Graham Potter. There's still some Ralf Hasenhüttl.
Steve Bruce is safe for life, Dave.
Safe
Wiener.
For life. There you go.
The owner does not care where Newcastle finish. He knows what he's paying Bruce. He knows that he can control Bruce. He is absolutely spot on.
And actually, they'll accumulate more points under Steve Bruce than they did under Rafa, even though Newcastle fans still think Rafa's God, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyone else that's going to be jumping Patrick Vieira in the queue?
About what? Getting sacked first manager?
Early season pressure.
I've got Hasenhüttl and all Rafa at Everton.
No, I've got Munoz at Watford. Zisco Munoz. I think he's dead man walking almost with Watford unless he gets off to a flyer. But we've seen it also at Watford. Even managers get off to a flyer and then a couple of games into it later on, then all of a sudden they're gone. But they are like the weirdest club in the world. You know, a manager can be sacked after 2 or 3, 4 bad runs of games. Can be sacked. That's how trigger happy they are. So for me, if I were going to bet, I would put it on Watford losing their manager first.
Brilliant stuff, boys. We have talked and talked and talked and talked. The final word is, as we can tend to kick off on Saturday morning when Arsenal play Brentford, what are you most looking forward to all season? A final word from you all about, it could be a favourite player, it could be a signing that's coming, it could be a storyline, it could be something that you have been waiting for a long time. What are you looking forward to the most as the season rolls around?
fans. Let's get the fans in there. Let's get the atmosphere back. That's what I'm looking forward to, because it's going to make the game so much better. We saw it at the Euros. It's going to be great. So that's what I'm looking for. We know the football on the pitch is going to be fantastic. There's going to be storylines left, right, and center. Brilliant players. I'm looking forward to Sancho to see how he, if he can provide that X factor, if he can elevate United. But fans is the number one for me.
Just off the back of what Tommy's saying there with the fans, I am really looking forward to hearing the real crowd effects, the real sound of the fans in the stadium, because obviously we had COVID, we had the lockdown, and some of the the sounds that we were hearing through the Optus Sport commentary, and not only on Optus Sport, all the productions around the world that show the Premier League, some of the sound effects were absolutely honking. And I'm looking forward to hearing it back in real time and hearing the witty songs that come from each lot of fans. So I'm very, very much looking forward to it. And just to reiterate what Tommy said there, it's all about the fans, and I'm buzzing for it.
And Schwartzy?
Well, I've got a couple of things I'm really looking forward to. Firstly, I'm looking forward to Bridgie having a bit of a whinge and a cry about Harry Kane leaving and going to Man City, the demise of Spurs. And Harry Kane goes to Manchester City, Lukaku signs for West Ham, then I'm looking forward to that battle to win the Premier League title, which I think Chelsea have too much and win it in the end.
Brilliant. Oh, brilliant. Where are you out and about this weekend, Schwartzy?
I am. I'm at Brentford against Arsenal, so I'm looking forward to that opening game of the Premier League season, which will be absolutely brilliant.
I'll tell you what, the other thing I'm looking forward to is Schwartz's delivery of red wines to us three for his I can't wait to open one of them.
Tony, I gave him a reprieve. He at the 40th minute mark, he got his reprieve with his Premier League title prediction.
There you go, Bridgie. Unlucky, mate.
I'm the fines master of the Dave, game. Hey. Dave, you can shut up, Dave. Right.
True. Well, if you don't know the fixtures this weekend and you've listened to this whole podcast, I'm surprised. But anyway, we're going to run through them quickly before we end. Brentford kicks it off. They're back after 70-odd years. They host Arsenal. Saturday night, brilliant. Manchester United against Leeds United, 9:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. We're back to the old way the fixtures used to run, like they were before COVID hit. And it's a goal rush bonanza at midnight with Leicester hosting Wolves, Chelsea hosting Crystal Palace, Watford against Villa, Everton against Southampton, Burnley against Brighton, 2:30 a.m. Norwich against Liverpool, and then the round concludes with Sunday night action, Newcastle against West Ham, and that match we referenced right at the top, Tottenham against Manchester City. Now, if you want any more preview content, the Optus Sport app is absolutely heaving. There are Premier League world shows, there are preview shows, you get in-depth about all the clubs that you want. There is a new news and article section where you can go deep and read about everything you need to ahead of the season. And there is our new partnership with The Athletic, so you can read all about the inside word on, for example, how Messi landed at PSG, what's happening with Inter Milan as Romelu Lukaku leaves, and all the other transfer business that you might be interested in. Gents, thank you for your time this morning. You have me super excited for the season ahead, and it has been great catching up with you as ever. Thanks so much on both sides of the world.
Cheers, guys. I can't wait for Burnley against Brighton. That's going to be massive.
Well, we know what you're watching on Goal Rush then at midnight. Well, it's not midnight for you. You can sit back and watch it.
I can.
Hey, Schwartzy can go to games. It's happy days. Not down here.
You know what, boys? Football will get us through. And if not, we'll just watch Schwartzy go to all the games and be very, very, very jealous.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks for your time, guys. And everyone out there, we hope you enjoyed the opening episode of the season. We'll be with you every week again for the fourth time. We absolutely cannot wait. And until the next episode of the Gagapod, more than ever, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.